Hi, this is Cliff Sarin on computerweekly.com, where you can listen to and download interviews with leading experts on key topics of IT management and technology. I'm here today at the Gartner Symposium in Cannes, covering a presentation by Richard Hunter and Hung Le Hong. The presentation is about Google, Google's future, and how Google will be a $100 billion enterprise by 2015. The presentation has covered Google's cash cow, which is its ad revenue worth $50 billion, and the opportunities of cloud computing. In this part of the presentation, Richard looks at business intelligence.
Data, amazing as it may seem, is intrinsic to business intelligence. And Google's got lots and lots of data. Further, they have a history of enabling access to that information through relatively simple interfaces. They have tons of free cash flow, as Hung has pointed out. And there is no reason why they could not buy themselves into the business intelligence marketplace, and no reason in particular why they might not choose to extend the business intelligence marketplace into small and medium-sized businesses that have previously been priced out of that market because of their available resources in terms of money, staff, and so on, just as lots of enterprises were priced out of advertising until Google came along. What is less obvious about this play is that we don't think that the revenue potential here is very, very large. We think that it's in the neighborhood of one or maybe a few billion dollars per year, which of course to some enterprises would look like a lot, but not if you're pushing 100 billion.
Here, Hung Le Hong is talking about how Google can be an intermediary.
Anytime there is a marketplace that is fragmented, mention the health example, where there are health records all over the place, nobody seems to own them except for the individual health institutions that are out there. Anytime there's a large number of buyers and sellers that are trying to connect, that is an ideal situation for a company like Google to do, to match AdWords to people. You know, that's what they do with search, right? So if you take that notion that Google can connect somebody who's looking for something, somebody who's actually trying to sell something, that is the notion of the universal intermediary. So as an example, let's say you took a look at some of these industries here. Right? Advertising, as I mentioned before, something that they're already doing. They're linking somebody who's doing a search to a result that, of course, gets monetized from an AdWords standpoint. What if Google Checkout, in other words, retail payments, that's their payment. What if everybody subscribed to, instead of having to enter your address and giving your credit card number every single time you do that, you just did it once with Google Checkout, and then you didn't have to repeat that every single time. Of course, Google Checkout is an example of the universal intermediary scenario within retail. Of course, PayPal is the leader of this space right now. Real estate is another one. Now, this depends by country. Some countries do not have a national database for all the houses that are for sale. Some countries actually do. But in those countries that does not exist, and the U.S. is one of them, as an example, Google's actually starting to show some traction there. They have an entity that they call Google Base, which is a database that they encourage companies actually put out their inventory and their products on that database. And what's been happening is that more and more agents, real estate agents, are actually putting the properties that they're selling, as well as individual house owners, are putting their properties on Google Base, and it's becoming a spot to find actual real estate. Google Base is also the database, or the data source, if you will, for Google Product Search, which is Google's price comparison engine as well. Travel. Travel is a perfect example of that, where there's many, many providers and many, many different buyers, and Google can match that up, right? Now, of course, somebody does that today, and that somebody is called a travel agent. So there were rumors, actually, that Google was going to acquire Expedia, right? Don't know if that's pure speculation or not, but it makes a lot of sense because it is something that Google is well suited to do, at least in this universal intermediary scenario. Healthcare, I mentioned before, and even financial services, right? Finding brokers, finding insurance, helping you navigate the thousands and thousands of financial institutions and providers for your financial needs.
Richard Hunter now does the sums, to show how Google will become a $150 billion enterprise by 2015.
We think that 100 billion by 2015 is doable without a whole lot of work for these guys, and here's how it breaks out. These are the likely estimates and targets. We figure 94 billion from advertising, including expansion in their current markets and the new markets that we've described. We figure another 20 to 30 billion from acquisitions, the likeliest targets in this case being media companies and business intelligence companies. Another 2 to 6 billion, as we noted, as a cloud provider of commodity-priced infrastructure. Perhaps another 1 billion from business intelligence and data mining services. Did everybody see that graphic? It took hours to program. So we figure 117 billion to 131 billion without breaking a sweat. More difficult to estimate, you could add in another $10 billion for incubation services for cloud-based startups. As Hung noted, this is difficult to estimate because we really don't know exactly what kind of services might emerge from this stuff. But given the risks involved, we think $10 billion is a reasonable enough bet. And the universal intermediary, $12 billion. So Hung, you add that all up, and these guys could be looking north of $150 billion by 2015. Pretty impressive, don't you think?
Hold on a second. Hung reckons there's more. In fact, Google could be worth $300 billion.
Think about this situation. What about $300 billion? $150 billion, a lot. But if you look at actually some of the other scenarios, which I'm going to present right now, we see some potential for $300 billion. Now ask yourselves this, if Google has all of this information, all of it, they take on some of the travel industry and potentially financial services, if some of their seed money works and they have incubation and start different capabilities on the BI side and so forth, they have all this kind of information, all right? And you out of your mobile handheld, tell essentially Google where you are by either GPS or by the fact that they're triangulating based on cell towers where you are. What would you pay, right, to get any kind of information, to have essentially a digital support assistant with you in your handheld, right? If you were willing to pay something to the magnitude of maybe 10 euros a month, roughly, right, and if people started doing that, we estimate that Google, if they offered a service like that, could easily reach the $300 billion by the 2020 timeframe. Right? So it's a scenario that if they actually then started using the data that they collected, because most of the scenarios we talked about and using the infrastructure and so forth, but if they use the data that they actually have at their availability, you're looking at about a $300 billion scenario. One of the big companies out there is essentially a Fortune 10 company by 2020. Now, we made this slide a little while back before the financial crisis, so it's slightly off, but it does represent revenues. Though market caps are suffering immensely up there, revenues still hold. So in blue, you see the 2008 revenues for Walmart, the biggest companies in the world, basically, which, I cover retail, and I'm still astounded by, the $400 billion that Walmart and Exxon essentially made a year. But effectively, if those companies were to grow at, say, 10% a year in 2020, that's represented in yellow. And if Google grew at the rates that we're talking about in this presentation, it would actually become a Fortune 10 company by 2020.
And Richard Hunter now goes through some of the issues that Google will face.
Well, not all is roses in this scenario. And there are certain things that could blow Google up or slow it down. Let's start with the most important one, loss of trust. We've hit this several times in this presentation. Like Google's ability to manage large quantities of information, this is absolutely essential to everything they do. We believe that Google's management understands this very, very clearly. We are certain that when they say, don't be evil, they are reflecting what they understand to be a commercial imperative, not just a moral imperative. And in that sense, we doubt that they would consciously take steps that would position them as a malicious actor in anyone's mind. But that doesn't mean that some other malicious actor couldn't come in and perpetrate an act which would have the effect of damaging trust in Google. Suppose that Microsoft were to decide to play the market breaker game that it knows very well and devalue the price of online advertising by dumping advertising rates on the market. Local competition and regulation may prevent Google from participating in some local markets. It may strongly restrict what Google can do in certain markets. Certainly in the current economic environment, the resurgence of nationalism in economics as well as politics, in contradiction to the trend towards free markets that we've seen over the last decade or so, is a strong possibility. A slowdown in revenue, possibly as a result of a prolonged recession, in particular a slowdown in advertising revenues, which I think we have made it clear is the cash cow here, could have an impact on Google's ability to grow in multiple directions. A little less obviously, we think that huge success as an enterprise service provider might have a significant impact on Google's culture and have a significant impact on their ability to maintain the kind of growth that they've had. You know, it's one thing to spend 20% of your time thinking about new stuff every day. It's another thing to get a call at 4 o'clock in the morning telling you that the data center is down and you'd better do something about it. And finally, there's the potential that somebody else does search much, much better. We are significantly impressed by Google's capabilities in terms of search. We are significantly impressed by the amount of data that they have and their ability to connect practically anything to practically anything else within that huge pile of data. That said, there is still plenty of room for semantic breakthroughs out there. And it is possible that somebody could penetrate to the core of meaning in information in a much more compelling way than Google and make Google's search look pale by comparison, which in turn would impact their ability to attract all of those eyeballs that they're currently attracting.
Thank you very much. And please join me again on www.computerweekly.com/podcasts.